It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, and Rob Lewis. A big thank you, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Since 1999, they've been local. They've been your trusted source for roofing, siding, windows, or garage. Contact Exterior Home Solutions today. Got a full bank of questions. We'll start with KP Volstrong. Who are you rooting for against Alabama or LSU in 2 weeks? So kind of what we were talking about earlier this week. In 2 weeks when those two teams square off, who should Tennessee want to win that game?
I think you should want Alabama to win, Hubber. I mean, you know, that right now it's the best win you have. And, you know, I mean, if they go 9-3, if that's the best win you have. Again, we're saying Tennessee's, in this theory, Tennessee's losing to Georgia, right? If Tennessee beats Georgia, it doesn't matter. They'll be in Atlanta, so it doesn't matter who wins this game. But, you know, but just going off the fact that Tennessee's 10-2, you need Alabama to be 10-2.
And we're under the assumption that Alabama would not be ahead of Tennessee at 10-2.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're under that assumption based off the fact of where they're currently ranked and the fact that Tennessee's got them head-to-head and all that. I mean, I know they had them head-to-head 2 years ago, but I think the human element kicked in of Hendon Hooker's gone, Joe Milton's in.
And you just got embarrassed, like, against South Carolina, which was – and that's – if you lose that game, you can't lose that game like that. So, Sam Smith, 22-33, who do you think gets the start at quarterback for the Wildcats? Anybody?
I don't think it matters. The chatter up there is it might be the kid that finished the game last week.
Gavin Wimsett, Rob, is if he gets a start, is that any more challenging for the Tennessee defense?
I think it's awful. I mean, if I'm a Kentucky fan, it's an awful proposition either way. I mean, Vandegrift, I mean, I'm not trying to hate on the kid, but I mean, you think you're getting an answer there, and you clearly did not get an answer there at quarterback, and you know, the other guy's just not an SEC level passer.
He's no Noah Brandeis Hubs.
Great
pull, AP.
That is a great pull. I think they'll play both of them. I think they'll play both of them early. I mean, I think that, I mean, Stoops said last week that they had a plan to play Wimsett, I think the third series or something like that. So I think they've been planning on doing that. Two different style of guys. Vandegrift's not going to run around. At 150 yards rushing, Wimsett's the third leading rusher on Kentucky's roster. But he's 8 of 20 for 93 yards and two touchdowns on the year throwing the football. Two interceptions throwing the football. So you got to be prepared for a little single wing running around type deal if you got Wimsett in the game. And with Vandegrift, you can pin your ears back and go. And I think you have to be very alert if you're Tennessee defensively because you got to play it two different ways in terms of contain and that type of stuff. But I don't think it matters. I think Kentucky's going to scramble and search for any answer they can get anywhere in terms of who starts. You know, we'll see. My guess is Wimsett probably starts and then see where they go from there.
Do you think Southland's area is available if Tim Banks needs a resources suite for how to defend it? Running Kentucky quarterback.
Maybe he can call the LSU defensive coordinator and find out because it went well for the Tigers last week in College Station.
Rob, I've been getting some requests this week that the people want to see some more Kentucky hate from you. And is it Kentucky hate or is it just football Jesus hate?
I don't hate Kentucky. I mean, I just it's it, and it wasn't Will Levis hate. It was just I never understood the media hype around this guy. So and it continues. The lack of understanding continues for the love of Will Levis.
It's Rob's bleed over from his love affair for Kentucky basketball.
Hey, Rob, did you know, speaking of Rob's love affairs, did you know Jones became the sixth former Tennessee head coach to get to 100 wins?
AP, I did not. Did you see that on Twitter?
I did. I just figured that that's your guy.
Shout out to Butch. I'm glad you mentioned that. Shout out to Butch.
Shout out to Butch. You get that jersey.
We are gonna. I'm gonna whip up a little Barb Ship dip tonight. In honor of that achievement.
Another one here from Sam Kane. What did you learn about this team Friday night in Nashville? The baseball team. Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a team that hits. I think Andrew Fisher is going to hit 30 home runs this year. I think Dean Curley is going to hit in the heart of the order, be a big piece in the heart of the order, whether it's 3, 4, or 5.
Whoa. 30 home runs. That is an incredible shot you've called here. Hold on a minute. What are we on? We are on October 31st. Welcome to Halloween. And he has called 30 home runs, which would be pushing a record that was just broken last year.
Well, I mean, there might be some hyperbole in there, but I've gone over there probably more than 10 times this fall. Every time I've been there, he's hit a home run. Man, now, he might strike out 60 times.
I don't know that Kirby Puckett would hit 30 home runs.
The dude's going to rake, and he's also going to strike out a ton. That's my point. I think Dean Curley is going to be huge in the middle of that order. I think, again, Jay Abernathy, I don't know if he'll start, but I think that he's going to play somewhere as a, you know, outfielder. He can play a little second base. I mean, I was over there on Monday. I mean, he had a hose to the plate and, you know, got a guy out in a rundown situation. I mean, he's just a ball player. So I've been really impressed with Jay Abernathy. I think they have some questions to figure out on the mound. Obviously the last two starter roles for the weekend, they'll have some time, and I think it'll be kind of by committee a little bit, but, you know, trying to figure out what role suits best in the bullpen. There's a lot of new arms back there, and, you know, we need to get Tanner Wiggins healthy. Brandon Arvidsson's going to be a guy for you. You want Breedlove to be a guy for you. Jeff County's Tanner Franklin needs to be a guy for you. So, you know, just a lot of the same. This team can hit, and there's a lot of questions right now, but it looked like a typical Tennessee baseball team.
When you go over there, do you have a white hard hat on that have the Volquest logo on the side?
I need to, because there's no netting. So, literally, head on a swivel or... You might get hit by a baseball.
I thought the better answer would have been like, no AP. I only have to wear that when they have live construction going on, and that never happens.
Hey, they're making progress. They got steel.
They are moving steel around.
They've had two pretty good weeks over there.
Oh,
they have. Now they're still doing utility work in the street, but they've had two pretty good weeks of construction. I mean, you're seeing progress in terms of structure right now.
The utility work is kind of like Alcoa Highway. Like, I'm convinced in 5 years it's still going to be happening. But they are really still.
Or right there as you get on 26 in Asheville. Like, they've been working there for, you know, since the Jimmy Carter administration.
Yeah. Let's go to Nashville 615. Do you think this team truly has a championship mindset? Do you see or hear about the guys doing the little things it takes to be great?
I mean, I think this team is – they've got good leadership. They're a veteran team. I think they understand things. I mean, what is a championship mindset? I mean, what does that mean? What are the little things? I mean, at Alabama, we're learning the little things is showing up on time, right? Or you're supposed to tuck your shirt in. Like, it's about results. Go play. I mean, I think this team's got to be better offensively, but I don't think that their struggles offensively is a mindset issue. I think it's an execution issue. Defensively, they're certainly playing at a championship level.
I agree with Hubs from a standpoint of, like, there have been teams over the years that won championships that, you know, had all kinds of guys late to meetings and they were out partying and this and that. And then you had teams that were, like, you know, on time or 10 minutes early for every meeting and all that stuff that never won anything. So, I mean, it still boils down to Jimmys and Joes.
I think I'm not saying other position groups don't clearly, but I mean, obviously, the defensive line has a championship mindset because that group is bought in. You have guys not missing practice because they're afraid they're going to miss their spot in the rotation. I mean, it's Tuesday, and we're waiting an hour for Rodney Gardner because he's out there busting their tails after practice is over. And, I mean, we're entering the month of November, and, you know, I think that group is clearly different from the others. Not to say the others don't or they're not working hard or don't have that mindset, but, I mean, I think you can point to one position group that clearly has a championship mindset, and that's that defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, but I mean, we're not out there every day to see the differences and, you know, all of them. But clearly, I mean, you don't have to be on the practice field to see the difference in, you know, what the defensive line is going through.
Well, and the defensive line had, I mean, that championship mindset started 4 years ago. They weren't nearly good enough. They weren't.
But I think that's a great point.
You know, but that was the. That was the established, this is how it's going to be. If you don't like it, you can head on elsewhere. So I think that you can have you can have that mindset and it doesn't result in immediate, you know, success. But over the course of time, you see what it's given the defensive, given this defensive front as they've gotten more and more talented.
A couple more questions here from Nashville 615. Has conference realignment and the strengthening of the Big Ten and SEC had the opposite effect? Teams like BYU, Miami, Notre Dame skate by on an easy schedule while the SEC beats each other up.
I mean, I think part of it is this is year one. I think the powers that be, i.e. Greg Sankey in the Big Ten, will figure out a way to, you know, kind of streamline things. I mean, I agree with the question, but I think I don't think that anybody foresaw, you know, BYU, Kansas State, Pittsburgh, you know, all these, you know, potential flies in the ointment. I think that a lot of that is year one. I also think it's kind of an anomaly.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is that the difference is we're sitting here having conversations about the SEC and the Big Ten teams going as a two-loss team in. Whereas if Miami, if the call had not been overturned against Virginia Tech, what's the conversation about Miami right now? If Oklahoma State decides to play defense the last 30 seconds against BYU 2 weeks ago, where's the BYU conversation? I think the difference is in the SEC, because of the respect the conference has, you can have multiple losses and still have a chance to get in. I'm not sure that's the case with some of these other conferences right now. You've got to be perfect all the way through in a lot of ways. Now, we'll see what happens if Clemson and Miami are both one-loss teams at the end. Do they both get in? I mean, we'll have to find out. But, I mean, Iowa State, if they lose the game instead of winning it on basically a walk-off at the end of the deal, they're out, right? They don't have a chance, you know, with one loss to get in the playoff. So I think that's the difference. There's grace and some leeway with the SEC and the Big Ten in that you can lose multiple games and still be a factor. I'm not sure in those other leagues, those teams he's talking about can lose multiple games and still be in the hunt for the playoffs.
Well, and another thing to consider is how will, like, say one of those, you know, BYU gets in and gets murdered in, you know, round one by, you know, Tennessee or, you know, Georgia or whoever. I mean, I think that will inform the committee going forward, you know, in the future.
How much do you think NIL plays a part in playing time that the players receive, Austin?
I don't think it does. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it's 100%, but I would say it's bare minimum impact. Like, there are plenty of guys that are making a chunk of money that sit on the bench. If it mattered, certain guys would be out there.
I can tell you, I mean, you think it matters? You think Rodney Garner cares what somebody's making? I can tell you the head basketball coach doesn't care what somebody's making. I mean, there have been plenty of times where I know, and AP, you know this too, where the guy making the most on in basketball has been struggling to get minutes. Struggling.
Yeah, I mean, look at the end of the game the other night. Chaz Lanier didn't play the last 6.5 minutes.
That's an exhibition game.
I get that.
I've seen Sweet 16 games for the guy making the most NIL money.
Yeah,
sat on the pitch.
I mean, it's about winning at the end of the day. I mean, it's 100% about winning, and I don't think somebody's sitting there going, "Well, you know," in a meeting on Thursday, going, "Well, we got to get Tommy 34 snaps because, and Jimmy's got to get 22 because Tommy makes X amount of dollars more than Jimmy." I mean, it just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in the National Football League. You got to go win the game. And you win by playing the guys who are playing the best football for you.
I mean, the risk you run if you don't play those guys is there's the transfer portal.
But why does Josh Heupel care what Spire's paying somebody? I mean, or Rick Barnes?
It certainly doesn't work that way at VolQuest. I mean, I'm on the 2-minute drill when Eric makes 3 or 4 times what I make. So, I mean, like, you know, you just
true.
How many times is AP? I mean, I got to go pick the kids up, and Kane's like, I got lunch.
I mean, you run the risk of the transfer portal, but if a guy's running, you know, from that standpoint, based on solely on a snap count for a year or for a game or whatever, I mean, does the guy need to be a part of your program? I mean, I think those are, and early on in this process, I think there's probably been more fear about, oh, we may lose a guy. But I think as we go through this process, I think it's going to get more and more about, look, the guy doesn't want to be here. You know, we'll go find somebody else. We'll go to the portal and get our answer, right? I mean, look at the roster flip Tennessee's had in the secondary, right? Some guys didn't want to be here. They wanted more. They didn't get more. they depart, you go get Jamon McCoy, go play the next play. You know, I mean, roll on. And that's just, I think for fans, it's going to be a hard concept. The same way I think for coaches, it's going to be a hard concept to say, we're going to let player X walk. Okay, because coaches never get told no, so they want all of them, right? I mean, just keep paying them all. Okay, we can't lose him. We got to pay him a little extra something here because we might need him. Well, coach, he's your third offensive guard. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, like, we got to have. The reality is the business model is going to be that you move on from some people because they're not worth what you're paying them, right? Or they want more and you don't think they're worth more, so you move on. That's the transition college athletics is in right now, in my opinion.
Other than James Pierce, do you think anyone has a chance to be a first or a second round pick? I don't know if the question just means in general, because of course in general, but maybe for this spring coming up.
I don't know about this spring coming up. I mean, I don't know that any of those defensive interior guys are going to go that high, but I mean, clearly there's going to be some guys over the next couple of years. I think that's pretty obvious. They're going to be drafted. They're going to be drafted pretty high. I'm going to be fascinated to see it. I don't think he's going to go. I know he's not going in the first round. And I don't think it's a second round pick. I am going to be really interested to see what the NFL evaluation is of Dylan Sampson.
Yep.
I think that one's going to be pretty fascinating to see because of where his game is and his style of game with where the NFL is right now. What do they think of him in terms of fitting the mold of an NFL tailback? I think his draft stock is, and I don't think it's going to be that high, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what it is.
Big Ol' Vols 26. How much does the national narrative about us not getting into the playoff change if we had hit a couple of those open deep balls against Florida and Bama and won by a couple of scores like we could have? It seems like we are three or four plays away from everyone calling us unstoppable.
I don't feel that at all. I mean, I think Tennessee's tenuous nature of them getting to the playoffs is about losing to Arkansas. Has nothing to do with hitting a couple of deep balls.
But I do think there's a little bit of a perception deal that if Tennessee were playing better offensively the last 2 weeks, some people would say, "Boy, they're trending in the right direction. They're moving. It's going particularly well." I mean, you've watched shows right now, and everybody's talking about who's the team to watch in the SEC. And I'm not seeing a lot of people say Texas A&M. I'm seeing a lot of people say Georgia, you know, and that's because of the way they played at Texas. You know, obviously they won that game, but it's the fact that they did the things that they did there. So could it change the people's, you know, the talking heads' thoughts on where Tennessee is offensively? Maybe. Does it change the percentage indicator of making the playoff? No, that's going to be based on wins and losses, and you're where you are right now because you didn't win at Arkansas. I mean, if you're undefeated right now, everybody's talking about you differently, whether you've been shut out three first halves in a row or not.
Robo 22, do you think the staff has worked on some new wrinkles to the offense during the bye week? If so, what do you think those new wrinkles might be?
I have no clue. They're always working and putting in new plays. I mean, that's you know, they're always you know, going back to the Wayback Machine and pulling something out that had success in years gone by or whatever. But I mean, you know, we have no way of knowing any of that.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to suddenly show up in a wildcat, and you know, or they're going to suddenly play six defensive backs, or you know, I don't think it's going to be anything radical. Could there be a wrinkle or two here and there? I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, could I see them running a jet sweep to Mike Matthews? Yeah, okay. I mean, perhaps, but I mean, how big of a wrinkle necessarily is that? I mean, I don't think there's anything drastic coming.
It's funny you mentioned the Wildcat. Greg One Vol says Hopple's always looking for new wrinkles. Do you think he would ever consider a Wildcat package? If so, who on the roster could you see filling that role? I'm thinking Boo.
But what's the point of it? I mean, to me, it's you got a quarterback who's got some legs if you'll use them. Your run game leads the SEC in rushing. To me, you're doing Wildcat stuff when
if you're Kentucky and you can't score.
If you're struggling mightily in the red zone, if your short yardage stuff is just really ineffective. I don't think there's anything that would require Tennessee to say, okay, we're going to eliminate, you know, one potential ball handler here and hand it direct snap to a running back or to somebody else and take off running. So no, I mean I don't think. Has Josh Heupel lined up in any kind of Wildcat? I mean, maybe they've direct snapped it to a running back beside the quarterback, but I don't think they've ever taken and done just a straight Wildcat.
Was the last trick play the one against UT Martin?
With Princeton Fant.
With Princeton Fant. I'm pretty sure he just doesn't do a lot of trick plays. It's just not who he is. Like, I think he'd rather just, you know, do what he does and doesn't get into the whole trickeration thing. You've not seen fake punts or any of that. So, I mean, how many times have, you know, Jackson Ross, and he's got a great arm. But, I mean, like, not to that point where he's done.
He runs anything. A 4.5.
4.4 now, Rob. He worked on the glutes in the offseason.
All right, we got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Yeah, that phone number is 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They've been local and trusted for how many years, AP?
Since 1999.
But how many years? I want to hear you say it.
25 years.
Okay, well, that's not as good. But 25 years, contact.
You've been 25 doing this
years.
25 years?
Question mark. I need to hear the question mark in your voice, AP.
We always appreciate Exterior Home Solutions. All right, back into the questions. We'll go to NWGA Vol. How important are style points, particularly the appearance of the Vols offense improving for the Vols to be one of the 12-team playoffs? Control your own destiny, win your games, okay? But if you are in that conversation of 10-2 and all that, 100% Rob, style points, I mean, leave no doubt. Go beat a team by 50. You know, play an exciting brand of football. I mean, it's not everything, but it would look better if you're out there just beating the brains in of your opponent. So, yeah, I think style points are important.
Yeah, I mean, if you're 11-1, that they're not going to matter at all in the SEC. If you're 10-2, I think they're going to matter quite a bit. So, I think that's my answer.
Well, and I think that's what one of the previous questions was Posters was asking in his question. Would Tennessee be perceived differently if they'd hit some deep balls and scored more points because they would have more style points? Would people think differently of Tennessee had they won more impressively against Alabama and Florida in big play fashion, scoring points? Would that help them with their style points? I think that's sort of what he was asking there, which is why I think it would help the perception of you. If you can get going and score and be more pretty to watch on offense, for lack of better words.
Let's go to Ballman 98. Should Coach Chop be moved outside linebackers coach and let Eckler just coach special teams? The problem with that, AP, is you only have a certain amount of on-the-field coaches, and in order to elevate a guy from a sports staff like Chop, then one of the on-the-field coaches would have to no longer be on the staff.
Not true. You can now have as many on-the-field coaches as you want. It boils down to only a certain amount can go out recruit.
Can go on the road, I guess. Yeah, that's
so. Like, yes, yeah. In theory, you could go ahead and give Chop the Leo's title, and you know, maybe a little bit of a bump in pay, and you know, I mean, he was out on the road recruiting last week, so that move already has kind of, you've started to see them, you know, get him involved more. But I do think it's important, Hubber, you know, for a guy like Coach Chop, who I think ultimately wants to be on the field, to have a more defined role than, you know, just helper and guy that goes recruits.
Yeah, I think he probably does more on the practice field than most fans know, in terms of kind of helping Rodney Garner and helping with those ends. I mean, that group's always together. The Leos and the defensive line are when we're seeing them, they're in practice together. There's not a whole lot of, all right, we're going to take the Leos over here and do something. They're all kind of under the Rodney Garner umbrella. And have been that way, but, you know, since Rodney got here and Coach Chop got here when he couldn't be on the field before the rule changed. So, I think he's pretty involved right now with helping. But I think all of them fall under the Rodney Garner umbrella because he's overseeing all the defensive line, including the Leos.
Hey, Pete, don't you think, I mean, or Hubbard, wouldn't it make sense for them to do kind of what basketball just did, where they gave him like two more, you know, full-time assistant spots, but you have to rotate who's on the road recruiting. Like, you have, you know, four at a time. Somebody's got to be off.
I mean, that's basically what they've done. You can be on the field as a coach now. you can have as many coaches as you want.
All the polos.
Pay them whatever you want to put, but they only, you know, but only certain ones can go on the road. So, yeah, you rotate them. So, like, you know, like Alec Ablin may go out, you know, to see two tight ends, and then Max Thurman may go out the next time Tennessee's out on the road to go see some, you know, players that, you know, he's been involved with. Something like that.
Has Tim Banks changed the narrative about coaching the defense of a Josh Heupel run football team? If he were to leave, will there be an easier time replacing him compared to when he was first hired?
I do think it would be easier, Hubbard, because the defensive roster is vastly better than what he inherited.
You have more than three linebackers? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you've established yourself. I think Josh Heupel's has evolved a little bit too, right? I mean, look at the way they're playing. I think that his offense is playing a little more complimentary. They haven't gone just breakneck pace all the time. He hasn't gone for it on every fourth down. Things that he did early when he was at Tennessee that allow and force the defense to play just an enormous amount of snaps. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there would be, you know, more interest in the job, but you're going to have to pay money. I mean, you know, you're not bringing anybody in here for less than $2 million a year. I mean, that's where the market's going to be at to go get a high profile, you know, big time coordinator. And you know, I think that's the reality of where it is. Would they be able to get in the door to talk to more people about this job than they would have 4 years ago? I think the answer to that is yes.
WiseVol 24, a couple over-under scenarios, so we'll go around the room. Over-under 250 yards passing for Nico on Saturday. I'll take the over.
I'll take the under.
Because that's not been something that he's done only one time in what, six Power 5 starts, Power 4 starts, but class F full.
I'll take a push.
So you think he's going to throw right at 250?
You know, if I'll take the under until I see him hit a deep ball. When they hit a couple of deep balls, then that thing may be 300 yards. But
they're 0 for
last nine or something like that.
I agree with Hubs. Like, I've been saying the last several weeks, whenever the offense finally gets it, it's going to be not good for whoever they're playing. I don't know when that point is.
He just hit Dante Thornton 55 yards.
So he's 1 for 9 or whatever.
It was still under 200.
Yeah. Well, I looked at you in the fourth quarter, and after that pass, he was at like 194, and there was like 5, 6, 7 minutes left or whatever. And I was like, it's a bummer because they're not going to let him throw it again. He's not going to get past that plateau of 200. Over under 5 carries for Seldon.
I'll take the under.
Under. Over under 7 snaps for Mike Matthews.
I'll take the over.
Snaps? Yeah, I'll go over. It's easy.
Well, he got 5 against Alabama, but he got, what, 9 against Florida?
I'll take the over.
I'll take the over.
But not by a lot.
Over under 5 scrambles / design runs for Nico. I mean, those are two different things, so I'll definitely take the over there.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over. I mean,
yeah, as far as just like carries, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky can get after the quarterback. They haven't played well the last couple of weeks, but, I mean, there'll be some pressures. And I think Nico, based on what we saw in the second half against Alabama, is – going to be more decisive in terms of tucking and running, because moving the yard marker a few yards to make the next down more manageable makes too much sense and was too good for Tennessee's offense in the second half against Alabama.
S. Pitt Vol says, I know it's a couple weeks away and the Vols have to take care of business against Kentucky and Mississippi State, but can this team compete with Georgia? It's been a while since Tennessee's been in a competitive game against the Bulldogs. Tennessee's track record against good teams on the road has been less than stellar recently. So how does this team find a way to make the game in Athens competitive?
Lean on the defense.
Yeah, I think they're absolutely competitive from what I've seen from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, you know, defense travels. Your defense has to show up. Offensively, you got to play well. But, I mean, from a roster standpoint, I mean, Tennessee, this is not, you know, 4 years ago when you weren't competitive that way. I think in 22, when you looked at this team, I mean, Tennessee probably wasn't ready for that moment, right? I mean, and that was a really good Georgia team. I don't know. Now, Georgia's getting better. They're getting some guys healthy. They're going to be better. I think Georgia will be playing their best, you know, this last month here. But I don't know that this Georgia team is where they were a couple of years ago either. So, yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee can be competitive. Do they have to play well? Sure. They do. And on the road, playing well has not been Tennessee's greatest strength. So we'll go see if they can get it done. But first, you better take care of business Saturday night and take care of business Mississippi State. You want to be playing your best when you go to Athens. You got to get your offense all on track running. If you're going down there getting shut out in the first half by everybody, then it's got a chance to be a long day in Athens.
What are the chances we see another Dante Thornton deep ball connection this Saturday? I think the better question would be, where is he at health-wise? Played, 9 snaps against Florida, 25 snaps against Alabama, had the bye week. Where is he at health-wise? Because, I mean, if he's in the game, Rob, he's deep threat. I mean, he's averaging whatever
plays, he's going to catch a deep ball. He's not going to catch many, but he's going to catch one. I mean, he's got 12 catches. He's averaging, 34 yards a pop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if he had enough catches, he'd be leading the country in yards per catch.
2021, Javonte Payton, 75 yards. Bayless Jones, 72 yards. First three snaps, 4 snaps of the football game. 2022, on the opening possession, Jalen Hyatt, 55 yards. And then last year, Jalen Wright went 52 yards. They big played Kentucky to death, AP. I mean, that's – Josh Heupel has big played Mark Stoops' defense to death. They've got him in more busts than anybody that they've played on a consistent basis. Whether it's whatever, switch route, whatever. They've created matchups that have won big time for them. If you're based on that history, yeah, he should catch a deep ball.
Yeah, they've done them all what you just described was all right out of the jump. I mean, they've big played them overall, but man, they really big played them early. And so
opening possessions. Crazy. Yeah.
What was it, 2021 on the road? It was like Tennessee ran 3 plays, had 2 touchdowns.
That was first year, 2021. I mean, they threw a switch route to, vertically down the field, and they threw a receiver screen basically that went to the house. They have absolutely out of the gate. I mean, got Kentucky in bad, bad situations very early.
Here's some advice for Kentucky. There's no Biletnikoff Award winner on this team this year, but how about not put a linebacker on him and try to run with him? Follow a guy in a switch route, because that pass you were talking about, the Jalen Hyatt, I mean, just wide open right after he torched Alabama for 5 touchdowns. Tennessee continues to, this is from Gator Dog, Tennessee continues to recruit at a higher level each year in the high school and transfer portal ranks. Do you think there is a ceiling for Tennessee in recruiting? Can they compete with Georgia and Ohio State?
I don't know if there's a ceiling. I don't know if I also see Tennessee with top 3 classes every year either. So, I mean, I think you just got to, get your fair share of guys that I think that, that can help you and, keep developing and load up your roster. I mean, Tennessee's done a nice job of that, overall, just having, really good players and depth.
It's about stacking. I mean, it's about stacking year after year. That's what those teams have done, whether they've been number 1, whether they've been number 5, whatever. They've recruited very well, and they've stacked them on top. And that's what Tennessee's done defensively, is they've stacked classes. And the result of that is this roster that you're seeing on the defensive side of the ball and the upgrade that they've had there. They've retained and they've stacked talent on top of that. That's the key to this. Whether it's the top-ranked class or the sixth-ranked class, I mean, what's the difference in those, in terms of, okay, does the second-ranked class, are you 3 games better, 2 games better? We don't know any of that. You've got to continue to recruit at a high level and stack classes every year. And that's what Tennessee's trying to do. And then you got to supplement it with the portal. That's the key.
Any of these guys going to be contributors next season? Nathan Robinson, what's his name? Wallace, Jesse
Wallace. Jamal Wallace.
Jamal, there we go. Jamal Wallace from junior college, Carson Gentle, or Kellen Lindstrom.
I would tell you Nathan Robinson will be. And I'd say Jamal Wallace will have a real shot to be.
I agree.
The others, I mean, again, I don't know about Lindstrom. And then I don't know about Carson Gentle.
I think it's more about development for the last two. What do they look like over the course of the next 6 months or so? But Jamal Wallace is a junior college body. Physically, he's far enough along. I think he's definitely going to help them next year. And I think Nathan Robinson continues to develop to be in that rotation. And we know they want to play, 6 guys on the defensive interior?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you get Bryce, let's say you were fortunate enough to get Bryce and Eason to come back. Okay. So you got Eason. Okay.
Then Boy, you got Hobbs.
You got Moy. Then you got Wallace. That's 4. You're still looking for more help there. So Nathan Robinson's going to be in that mix and the defensive interior for sure.
Big Vol over 69, based off the offensive line improvements versus Alabama. Do you think the improved pass pro in that game was mainly scheming, moving Nico out of the pocket more, like that long pass to Dante Thornton? How much do you think was improved by the line in general?
I was just, I mean, they moved him out of the pocket some, but it wasn't like that was, you know, majority of the snap. I don't know for sure, but I'm going with it was improved play by the offensive line. I mean, I thought they were just better, more sound. I mean, pass protection had been such a glaring issue previously for them to, you know, clean so much up. I mean, I think it was, you know, guys doing, I think it was guys doing their job better.
Yeah, I mean, he still had a couple sacks against them. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was clearly much better than what you saw the last couple of weeks. I mean, Nico's one interceptions. I mean, he had literally all, I mean, he's making a sandwich back there. I mean, he had all day long before he was flushed out of the pocket. So, I mean, I just think it was much better in that one football game. Need to continue to get better, but it was better.
I think it was better, but I also think they did some things to help it a little bit too, from the standpoint of, you know, you're throwing slants. Okay. That's a quick throw, right? First window, second window slant. I mean, look at the you weren't getting to Nico on the first play of the game, right? That was a catch and get it out of your hand quick slant. I don't think we saw some deep balls off play action, but you didn't see a bunch of, you know, 25-yard square ends or 20-yard square ends. I think the other thing Nico did in the second half is he was much quicker getting through progressions, 1-2 and get out, you know, at times to save a potential sack and to move the yard marker a little bit. So I think the offensive line clearly played much better. But I also think they did some things to help the passing game out a little bit by speeding some stuff up.
Yeah, the slant to Brew was obviously a part of the game plan because they went back to that and back to that and back to that.
Clearly, they didn't think Alabama could cover it.
And the biggest play of the game was an outside the pocket throw to Dante. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For run blocking, do you think it's teams just wearing down in the second half? Again, how much do you attribute the second half against Alabama to actually improvement versus scheme? Basically, was it the offensive line or was it more wearing teams down? I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, Tennessee's obviously been a second half football team offensively the last couple of weeks, but the defensive front seven is not as fresh and is not as, you know, feeling as well as they are in the first quarter. So I think it's a little bit of both. I just think it, you know, Tennessee just continues to pound away and pound away, and then eventually you start gashing some things in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, like, I agree that it's probably a little bit of both, but I would still lean more to scheme and adjustments than the wearing of them out. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we love, everybody loves percentages. So, like, if you're going on percentages, I would say it's 75% scheme, 25% the other team, you know, being durable.
Yeah, my thing is, if it's scheme adjustments, why are you not making those in the first half?
I agree. I mean, you have those iPads now.
You got everything on the sideline. I mean, why do you got to get to the half to fix it if it's major scheme adjustments? But it's the most for all the talk, Eric, about the passing game and its struggles, which we didn't anticipate. To me, over the last 3 weeks, the more baffling thing is that Dylan Sampson's averaging almost 3 yards more per carry in the second half than he is in the first half. I don't have an answer for why that's the case. I mean, it just seems bizarre to me that's where they are in their run game, that it's so inefficient in the first half, but then it's so good in the second half.
Yeah, and again, I don't know why this didn't happen in the first half, but he usually pops one in the second half. And, of course, that helps with the averages. I mean, he had, like, that 56-yarder against Florida, and they had a 35-yarder against Bama or whatever. But, yeah, he's been really good in the second half. That entire offense has. Southerner 98, do you think there's any opportunity for Neyland Stadium expansion? With the waitlist number only growing, it feels like it is feasible if the demand were there for it.
No.
I think you want to keep the demand, but I think you want to keep the stadium the same, because if there's demand, like, you can, you know, put too much in all of a sudden, then you can't fill it. You know, I mean, I think that's why, you know, taking Lindsey Nelson to, you know, what they're taking it to versus, like, doing what Mississippi State did and going overboard, we'll still make Lindsey Nelson a tough ticket. Like, I think, you know, you want to keep it to be a tough ticket. Don't you, Hubber? I mean, am I crazy in that? I mean, sure, it would sound cool if they could put 120,000 people in there, but I mean, like, probably not realistic for every game because, I mean, sports ebb and flow.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do, put a third deck on it? I mean, like, it's just not feasible. There's nothing structurally that makes sense to say, hey, we're going to expand it here. I tell you what you might see. You might see some more premium seating taking place in some different areas that might actually reduce seating a little bit in some spots. If you put a club level in the top of the lower bowl in the south end, right? Or you put a club level down field level in the south end and look at something that way, which has been in design stuff before. So now I don't think you're sitting there going, all right, let's see if we can go to 120,000. Because I mean, how are you going to get there? What do you, I mean, you're not putting a third deck on that stadium.
I think it's just
not going to happen.
You come up with some new technology where there's still grass, but you're under the field and you're looking up, pack them in there.
Like at Ripley's Aquarium, AP, is that what you think? Something like that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I like think one of those glass bottom boats that the Everglade Hubber loves.
Atheron's got a couple. Say Coach Banks, another Coach Banks question here, takes a head coaching job. What does Heupel do? Could you guys see promoting from within and naming somebody currently on staff as defensive coordinator? So promoting Chop and then naming, I don't know, like an Inge as DC. I'm just, could you see that? Or do you think that you'd go outside?
I think they'd go outside. I don't see them promoting from within if the job comes open. But that's me.
I don't know. I mean, to me, logic says that they go outside. I don't know where. I mean, William Inge has been a co-coordinator before. I mean, is he in a situation where you think he's ready to, you know, to call a defense and to run a defense? Perhaps that he is. I don't know. I mean, who all does Josh Heupel know in the coaching world out there that he could go get somebody to hire? I mean, obviously, that was not an easy hire last time. I think it's a more lucrative and is a better job than it was 4 years ago when Tim Banks took it, which is a credit to Tim Banks. But I don't know. I mean, to me, Inge would be the only possibility of promotion, and I just don't know where he is in terms of being able to marry the front and the back and call the defense and all that kind of stuff.
If Brian Jean-Marie was still here, same situation or maybe a greater chance of a promotion from within?
I think there's a better chance of that just because he was here for 3 years. But, you know, even then, you just don't know.
Don't you think, though, if Tim Banks got a head job, that BJ be his defensive coordinator wherever he went?
Yeah, maybe. You know, or Hype could call him back. I mean, you know, I mean, in BJ's Michigan contract, there's an out for the coordinator role. I mean, he can't go laterally for another linebacker's job, but he can absolutely leave with no penalty for a promotion.
How is Squirrel's shoulder? Will it hamper him the rest of the season?
I think so. I think it'll bother him to some degree. I think it's better because of the open date, but I think it's something that he's going to have to deal with for the rest of the year.
More likely, Nico starts connecting on long balls down the field more often, or the first half offensive struggles continue?
The connect.
Nico's going to hit some deep shots. I don't think that's a curse or anything.
No. Who did the last two home wins help the most on the trail, AP?
Who do they help as far as, like, you know, Tennessee with? I don't know if they help with anybody in recruiting. I mean, like, again, people, it's all about the atmosphere at these type of games. And sure, it helps that they won. They get to storm the field and smoke cigars and all that. You know, but, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Isaiah Campbell getting to see them, you know, obviously you could add, you know, even though he wasn't here for either one of them, DeJuan Morris, because, you know, he picked up the phone and called Tennessee, watching Tennessee win those two games. So, you know, and kids take notice.
Okay, let's get a couple of hoops questions here before we say bye. Market Square Streaker, and on our basketball season beginning, who would be your all-time Vol starting five? Rob, also rank these coaches, Mears, Pearl, Barnes.
I mean, I wasn't even barely alive for Mears, so I don't know. But Barnes, and then way, way, way below Pearl. Because this is not the NBA. Off-court stuff matters. All-time starting five, I mean, it's not very complicated. I mean, it's Bernard is at the top. It's Bernard, Ernie, Dale. I'll throw Chris Lofton in there, and I'm not worried about positions, so Grant Williams would be on my team.
No Allen Houston.
I mean, I love Allen Houston, but I'm going Chris Lofton. I mean, and again, because I'm not thinking about this one long and hard, but, I mean, Chris Lofton's on my team. for sure. I mean, Allen is better, but he's in my starting five. I mean, Allen Houston is a better basketball player, for sure.
Let's see here. How did Cam Carr look in the exhibition and the scrimmage with Davidson? I mean, I know you weren't there for the Davidson.
I didn't hear a breath about Cam Carr. So, man, I would say not good. Or probably about like he looked against Indiana, I would say, based on that.
What is the biggest weakness on Kentucky's defense? We're going back to football. I would say they need to get healthy, right? I mean, they got some good players that are not 100%. J.J. Weaver is a good player. Walker in the middle is a really good player.
I would go secondary.
Yeah, after Lagway completed 6 passes for 300 yards, I would go secondary.
Yeah, I mean, I would say secondary too, and then Auburn run for 326 yards, and I would go, maybe it's the defensive front.
But that's a lot. Like Eric said, that's a lot about health.
Which makes you wonder, how did they shut Ole Miss down the way they did?
It was a long time ago.
You know,
it's been a big Friday night in Oxford is all I got to say.
Hey, this team might have already quit on Stoops. I mean, he was going to A&M, then A&M didn't want him, then he came back here like it was like he turned it down, which is not the truth. And a couple of tough losses there early on. I mean, you had 3 straight losses in conference play. I mean, I think it's a completely different ball team than it was this team that played Georgia, Ole Miss. I think this team's quit on him. Or if they haven't quit on him, maybe another loss and they will. So I think that's kind of the answer to that.
Here's another stat of the day for you, Rob Lewis. Kentucky's given up 1,059 rushing yards this year, okay, which is not a big number. I mean they've done well. 680 of those 1,059 have come in the last 12 quarters.
Well, and the kid from Georgia, from Auburn, how many? Yeah. What did he go for? 287, 278. Yeah,
I mean, against Florida, it was big plays. They got big played to death. And then against Auburn, it was just more of a steamroll, just a consistent just mashing up front. So I don't know where they are right now. I mean, I think that they've, you know, what you're hoping if you're Tennessee is you can make some big plays because Florida hit the explosives. And, you know, you're hoping that lends you to some early big play success and some explosive plays. And then you see where Kentucky goes from there. But we'll see. I mean, I think Kentucky will try to muster up a stand here in the first quarter, the first half. We'll see what Tennessee's offensive response is going to be.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, to EC's point about, I mean, whether they've laid down or not, I mean, Auburn had just done nothing. I mean, other than Oklahoma, had there been a harder team to watch offensively in the conference than Auburn before? And no. Then they go up there and roll – you know, Kentucky like that on the ground. I mean, that was
– and Kentucky was up 10-0.
There you go. I was going to say, that was the perfect start for
Kentucky. You're going, hey, Auburn – I mean, you're sitting there, Auburn's quit. Auburn's going to – you know, Auburn's quit. They blew this game against Missouri previously. They've lost –
they just can't finish. And then
they can't finish. They've got jumped on 10-0. This thing may turn into Kentucky with a 35-3 win or something like that. You're like, Auburn's not coming back. And then all of a sudden, it's 24 unanswered by Auburn, and Kentucky can't stop the run at all. Strange. I mean, but that's college football. It's hard to figure out week to week what anybody's going to do.
Last one. Who did the checkerboard first, Tennessee or Kentucky?
Tennessee.
I think that question was put in there facetiously. All right. Appreciate you guys sending in questions as we do it every single Thursday here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
Hey,
as
Eric,
always,
before we go,
thank you to our
Eric,
friends.
Before we, what time are you going to post this?
7:30 on YouTube Eastern time, same as the last 3 years. Maybe 7:29 if I'm up early enough.
normally I'm the one that pokes the bear, and even I wouldn't touch that one.
Exterior Home Solutions since 1999 for roofing, siding, and repairs. Contact our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. That its phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Rob Lewis, I am Eric Kane. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.